Bulletproof Heart, Part 2 of the Hold Your Heart Into This Darkness series. Written by Tuesday's Gone. Read by Argentum Lupin. Gerard drove into the desert as fast as he dared, until the dry, cracked pavement looked like a river flowing underneath his wheels. One of the three passengers in the back seat, the one in polka dots, leaned forward between him and Mikey occasionally, giving him directions in a musical murmur. He obeyed unhesitatingly, shooting over the web of highways, access roads, and suspension-shaking dirt lanes as his headlights slashed through the dark. It was really fucking dark, until he looked up through the windshield and saw the smear of stars. Finally, a structure loomed up on the right, and his navigator said, "Home sweet gas station," with a little chuckle. Gerard pulled the car around behind the building, and through a creaking garage door it took all three backseat passengers to open. "Cover the car," the guy continued, rummaging in the faint moonlight seeping through the boarded-up windows for something by the door, which proved to be a kerosene lantern. All five of them squinted at the sudden light, and Mikey found an old tarp on a workbench a moment later. He and Gerard pulled it over the car together. "Now what?" Gerard said. "Now we go over the rules," answered their de facto leader, cheerfully but firmly. "Follow me, tumbleweeds." Gerard brought up the back of the little pack of refugees. Their leader went first, carrying the lamp. He was wearing an eye-poppingly bizarre combination of a biker jacket with the polka-dotted leggings, and had a bright pink ray gun holstered to his thigh. The other two strangers followed polka dots. They were a guy and a girl about Mikey's age, and the girl appeared to be helping the guy walk. Mikey followed them, hunched into his dusty leather jacket. They walked through what had once been a small convenience store attached to the gas station, cracked windows now boarded over, and into a smaller room. An office, with a table, an ancient hot plate set up, and a pile of blankets in the corner. "Oops, real first order of business," Polka Dot said in that same gently cheerful voice. "Anyone injured?" He set the lantern on the table and adjusted it to maximum brightness, turning to fetch a battered first aid kit from the counter. The girl spoke up, the first time Gerard had heard her say a word. "My brother, I think he sprained his ankle running from the tunnels after they got the tail end of the convoy." Polka Dots nodded, ignoring the brother's protest that he was fine, really, and pulled a length of bandage from the kit. He and the girl pulled the boot and sock from the offending foot and wrapped it tightly. Gerard met the guy's eye as they did it, and he winced slightly, but didn't look away. Gerard nodded at him. Why, he wasn't even sure, and the guy looked back at his sister.
"Good enough. Anyone else?" Polka Dots asked.
No one replied for a moment, then Gerard said, "Mikey," and Mikey shushed him. "Your shoulder."
"It's fine. Blast got the jacket, not me."
"Okay," said Polka Dots. "The rules."
He hopped up onto the counter, drumming his heels gently against the cabinets. He was, at close range, almost jaw-droppingly pretty, and he had kind eyes to match his gentle voice. What didn't match were his words. "So," he continued, "this is a safe house, except it's not a house and it's not really safe. That brings us to rule number one. You may have come out here to the zones with your brothers and sisters, your friends, your lovers, but it doesn't matter who you are anymore. The desert's in charge now, and it's not going to give you nada except dirt and ruins. You want more, you beg, barter, or steal. Stealing's not a great idea, because the only people to steal from are the drags and the runners, and either way's going to get you dusted for sure, unless you got a neon fucking angel on your shoulder." Gerard had been staring at Polka Dots, but he looked at his brother when Mikey cleared his throat.
"We didn't exactly bring the kitchen sink with us, pony," he said.
"I know, kiddo. We keep the safe houses stocked with baby's first survival kits, don't you fret. You're lucky you ended up with me. The rest of your people went with the doc, and he's still got that military approach to comfort, poor things. This is my favorite rabbit hole. I stocked it myself."
"What's in a survival kit?" Gerard asked, and Polka Dots, pony, gripped his knees, leaned forward, and smiled. His knuckles were tattooed "Show Pony" across the fingers of both hands. "Show Pony," Gerard read out loud. "Is that your name?"
"It is now. Out here in the brave new world, we like to pick a new one, or else someone else will give us one. As for the survival kits, well, you've got a party on wheels out there in the garage. Gas is the fucking gold standard, and you're a king with a chariot as long as it's still rolling. But that's rule number two in a nutshell. Keep your boots tight and your gun close. Like I said, we're not really safe, and you never know when you have to run."
We don't have guns, Mikey pointed out, and Show Pony chuckled and pointed at a crate on the floor. Mikey pulled the scrap of burlap off the top of it. Inside were half a dozen gleaming white BLI-issue ray guns, like the ones the other two had dropped on the table in front of them. Mikey pulled two out and handed one to Gerard.
I have no idea how to use this, Gerard said.
You'll learn, Show Pony said wryly.
I hope. You're too pretty to be dusted so soon.
He shook himself a little. Okay, survival kits. Guns, rebreathers. He reached into a box next to him on the counter and pulled out several funny little contraptions, like the mouth parts of a gas mask. When Gerard said that out loud, he nodded.
That's what they started out as. You find yourself a friend who likes to tinker with things, you can build yourself a nice little helmet, mask, whatever you please, but this'll keep the nasty stuff at bay. Keep it close.
What kind of nasty stuff are we talking about?
It was the brother asking.
You name it, we got it,
Show Pony answered. Rule 2.5, get a map of the zones, learn it, live it, love it. Some zones are never safe, most have areas that get nasty depending on the weather. That doesn't count the surveillance drones, the drag patrols, and the poison gas our friends the scarecrows like to surprise us with. Gerard, who'd been idly tapping a finger against the grip of his new ray gun, startled at the mention of Scarecrow.
You know the scarecrows?
Show Pony's eyes were keen, curious. Gerard hadn't thought about the way it would look, driving a sports car into the zones. He'd just been thinking about power, about speed, and the keys had been right there. Well, better they think him a thief than the alternative.
Let's just say they know me, Gerard replied.
Let's not talk about it right now, Mikey said tensely.
Fair enough, Show Pony said. There's only one more rule anyway, and it's the most important one. Find somebody you can trust to have your back, and make sure you've got theirs.
I thought the runners were all on the same side, Gerard said quietly.
Show Pony laughed.
The zones have more sides than a stop sign. That's the reason for rule number 3.
And this is supposed to be better than the battery? At least there it's all laid out in black and white.
What's life without a little color?
Show Pony pushed himself off the counter and started rummaging in the cabinets underneath. He pulled out a handful of tin cans and stacked them on the table.
Dinner time, tumbleweeds. Then bedtime. The waves are too quiet at night. We'll try to get in touch with the rest of your group tomorrow.
Gerard twitched again at the mention of the radio waves, camouflaging it by reaching for a can of beans and popping the top. He ate methodically, without tasting a bite, and thought it over. Show Pony had mentioned a dock. Did he mean the DJ, Dr. Death Defying? Did they have transmissions set up somewhere around here? He wasn't sure what kind of channels he'd be able to pick up all the way out here, or if he'd be able to decode them without his console, but there was a good chance someone had woken Course up by now, and the very last thing he could do with that on his mind was...
Sleep, G,
Mikey said, taking the empty can and the spoon from him. The others had already grabbed blankets and curled up in various corners of the room. Show Pony was still sitting up, stripped down to a sleeveless t-shirt emblazoned with the word NOISE in big block letters, and watching Gerard like he was a magic eye puzzle. Gerard ducked his head, tossing the can in the trash with the others and grabbing his own blanket, lying down next to Mikey and attempting to sleep. As soon as his head hit the folded blanket Mikey was using as a pillow, the lantern blinked off. He woke in the watery gray light of dawn with a gasped in breath, hands shooting to touch his own throat, but the hands on his shoulders were Mikey's, and they were just shaking him awake.
It's just me. Just me,
Mikey whispered, like he'd already been repeating it for a little while. His eyes were dark, disturbed. Gerard pushed himself out of the cocoon of blankets, looked around. Everyone else was still asleep, though Show Pony was showing signs of stirring. Gerard motioned Mikey to lie back down.
Sleep,
he murmured. He picked his way through the abandoned convenience store and into the garage, tugging the cover off the car. Course's car. It was filthy already, the high-speed trip through the zones to wherever the hell they were having left its traces on the white paint. Gerard circled to the passenger side, frowned when he saw the damage the Draculoid's blasters had done to the passenger door.
Fuck,
he murmured, running his fingers over the scorched metal.
We can check the junkyard outside, maybe find you a new door,
said a voice from behind him. Gerard whirled around. It was the brother, leaning on the doorframe and watching him.
Sorry if I scared you, he added.
We can do what now? I wasn't... Good morning, Gerard started over. What's your name?
I guess that means I should think one up, the guy replied. Guess you can call me Apollo and her Diana. We're twins, he added.
Gerard nodded. Well, Apollo, I know jack shit about cars, so I'm not going to be finding anything in the junkyard or otherwise.
You're a stellar fucking driver for a plebe, Apollo said. Car like this, you gotta learn how to take care of it. Tell you what, you help me get out there, I'll find you a new door panel and help you hang it.
Gerard was already halfway to the door when he said, Shit, wait, turned back to the workbench and grabbed his ray gun. He stuck it awkwardly through his belt and offered his arm to Apollo again. Rule 2. An hour later, he and Apollo had located a suitable door, and Mikey had been woken and recruited to help carry it. Reattaching it to the car wasn't as hard as he'd imagined, and when it was hung, he stared at the car for a minute, gently kicking a toe against the T-top panels he'd leaned against the side, before sticking them back in the trunk. What the hell, it's the fucking desert, he said, and Mikey and Apollo laughed. The new door was black, but it fit, and what was more important, it wasn't shot all to hell.
Needs some color,
a voice murmured in his ear. He spun around, hand on his pistol grip, and Showpony laughed at him.
You might make it after all. That needs some color, too, he added, nodding at Gerard's ray gun.
There's spray paint under the workbench. You want me to do art projects in a not actually safe house? Gerard asked, lifting his eyebrows.
Where else? Besides, there's bad weather coming in. We're going to have to hold off on the rendezvous with the rest of your group for another day or so.
Not my group, Gerard muttered, but he saw the look on Mikey's face and abruptly remembered. Right. Ray.
What kind of weather?
Mikey asked from where he was perched on the workbench, drinking a tin cup of something Apollo had called barracks coffee, which he swore tasted just like regular coffee. From Mikey's expression, Gerard wasn't so sure.
Rain, and a hell of a lot of it from the look of those thunderheads, Showpony answered.
Gerard peeked through a crack in the boards over the windows. He couldn't remember anything like it. The city's atmospheric grid had only malfunctioned a handful of times in recent memory, one of which had been yesterday.
When you're out on your own, you'll want to stick close to your home base when the storms roll through. One storm like that in the right zone will give you a nice acid peel. Two might peel off more than you're willing to part with. And that's not even counting the flash floods. She's a beautiful girl, but I doubt she'll fly, or float.
He gestured to the car. Gerard frowned, walking over to Mikey and stealing a swig of his coffee. Yep, not like regular coffee at all. He paced back and forth a few times. The car was beautiful, but the stark white didn't suit her mean silhouette. He squatted and rummaged through the cardboard box full of spray paint cans, pulling out colors and handing them up to Mikey. When Gerard had gone through the entire box, he stood back up and studied the line of cans.
You're really going to paint it?
Mikey asked. Once upon a time, before the drugs and the drinking, before the downward spiral, Gerard had done art all the time. He stared at the car now, and his hands twitched in a way that he recognized. It was the same itch he felt in front of a radio console, concentrated into a loop of movement. Eyes, brain, fingers. Eyes, brain, fingers. He picked up a paint can, and it all disappeared. Beautiful, imperturbable Showpony, the mysterious twins. The storm rolling over them, pouring danger and destruction. Mikey stayed. He handed Gerard the colors he called for and drank his faux coffee. Gerard didn't stop with the car. He painted all over the black and white in the room, Mikey's and his own ray gun taking slick coats of cherry red, sunshine yellow. He ruined his black coat with paint and threw it aside, sweated through his black t-shirt and sliced off the sleeves for rags with metal snips from the workbench. When he ran out of surfaces to paint, he stopped abruptly and leaned against the newly graffitied wall, spray can dangling from his fingers.
Party on wheels, huh?
Gerard murmured to Showpony, who'd materialized in the doorway like he'd been waiting for Gerard to finish. He probably had been. She's poisonous now. A giant black spider crawled over the white hood.
Well, aren't you a regular killjoy?
Showpony tugged on the ragged shoulder of Gerard's shirt.
Not looking quite so starched and pressed anymore, either, are you?
At Gerard's raised eyebrow, he let out another of his musical laughs.
There are some old jackets in a box in the office. Go help yourself. Holsters, too, for your shiny new ray guns.
What about rule number one? Gerard asked.
Well, if I'm offering, you're not begging. But look what you did to the walls.
I'm sorry, Gerard said, turning red. I just sort of went on autopilot and...
No, they're amazing. Artwork like that's well worth trading for.
Gerard started to walk into the building, and Showpony called after him.
You just earned your new name, pretty.
Gerard turned around, hands on his hips.
Oh yeah? What is it? Party poison, of course.
Showpony waved a hand at the car.
You think you can answer to that?
Depends who's calling. Gerard grinned a sudden sharp grin and went to look for a new jacket, humming under his breath.
We try not to move around too much at night, Showpony explained as they loaded into the Trans Am at the crack of dawn the next morning. We're zone hopping today, back to 3.
He'd raised the doctor on the transmission set just a few minutes ago. Showpony's 4 protégés were embracing Rule 2. Gerard tugged at the hem of his replacement jacket from the gas station's stash, dark blue with the dead Pegasus logo on the breast, and revved the engine.
"Point me in the right direction," Gerard said.
"I'll do better than that," Showpony said, handing Mikey a map with a little black dot in the middle of a bullseye field.
"Rule?" 2.5, I know," Mikey said. "Okay, is this where we go? So basically just head west until you link up with Root."
"Does that say guano? Seriously?"
Showpony laughed and nodded.
"I'll tell you from there when we get closer."
The map and Mikey, with Showpony's assistance, took them across the zones to a dilapidated warehouse-type building hunched in the lee of a hill.
"Wow," Gerard said, killing the engine.
"It's got a lot of... character."
"Takes one to know one, party poison," Showpony said.
Gerard huffed. Mikey huffed too, and Gerard turned to him and said,
"What, you're jealous of my alias?"
"Yeah, that's exactly it," Mikey said sarcastically.
Gerard could tell he meant it, just a little bit, and he reached across the gear shift to pat his knee. Several figures had come to the doorway of the building, and Gerard and Mikey popped the doors open, pushed the seats forward to let the back seat passengers out. The watchers were silent until Showpony emerged, then they called out greetings and started forward. Gerard could see when they got closer that they were all armed with brightly colored ray guns like Showpony's. No polka dots, though. Gerard couldn't say he was surprised. He doubted anyone else could pull them off. It was dark inside when they all stepped through the door. Gerard heard a happy cry, and when his eyes adjusted, he could see the twins being embraced by a girl about their own age. He smiled. Clearly, they were missed. He was still grinning vaguely when another, entirely familiar voice said,
"Oh, fuck, Mike,"
then corrected itself.
"Hey, kid."
It was Ray. Of course it was Ray, and his voice barely contained its layers of worry and relief. He wrapped Mikey up in a hug, and they just clung to each other for a second. Gerard looked away, eyes wandering to an alcove that was bursting with color, photos and posters and maps on the walls, and a Showpony bending over a long-haired man in a wheelchair. He couldn't see either of their faces, but from the way a large hand was curling around Showpony's waist, he was obviously spying on yet another private moment. He fidgeted, ran a hand through his hair, coughed.
"Gee,"
Ray said, barely above a whisper, and Gerard turned back to him and Mikey.
"Shit, man, I never thought... You really had me convinced you weren't coming."
Ray reached out and grabbed him, folded him into their hug.
"You found Mikey. I was so fucking worried when we realized the end of the convoy had got cut off."
"It was dumb luck," Gerard whispered back miserably. It was only hitting him now, how close Mikey and the others had been to capture, or worse. How lucky he'd been that his insane gambit to trap course had actually fucking worked.
"I don't believe in luck,"
Mikey said, muffled where his face was smashed against Gerard's jacketed shoulder.
"Of course you don't,"
Gerard said, resting his cheek against Mikey's greasy hair. Mikey had always believed in him.
"Gerard,"
Ray continued in a quiet voice, pulling back to peer out the front windows.
"Is that the car you came in? That's..."
"I think it's obvious where it came from,"
said a new voice, deep and smooth. Dr. Death-defying in the flesh, rolling his chair up to where Gerard, Ray, and Mikey stood.
"I think some of us are wondering how you got your hands on it."
He trailed off. "Party poison, Doc," Showpony said, resting a hand on Dr. D's shoulder.
"Huh, so he's got you on his side already. That's a pony moniker if I ever heard one."
"Doc," Showpony started. "It's fine," Gerard interrupted. "You're Dr. Death-defying," he added.
"I am until I'm not,"
Dr. D answered easily enough.
"Who are you?"
"My brother,"
Mikey put in, frowning. Dr. D looked from Mikey to Ray.
This is your inside source, is it, boys? That's a little farther inside than I was expecting, if you could get your hands on that car.
So maybe I'm just that good. What's your point?
Did Showpony go over the rules with you, party? You remember Rule 3?
You don't trust me. Gerard eyed Dr. D. I'm not saying I blame you, just saying I don't know what to do about that.
Oh, there's plenty to do around here. Maybe some honest labor's just what you need.
You mean what the doctor ordered? Gerard replied. He couldn't help it. Dr. D chuckled and turned to Mikey.
Kid, your brother's a smartass. I see where you get it from. Get that car out back and covered up, and have Jetstar show you to the storage room after.
With the Trans Am tucked safely out of sight at the rear of the warehouse, Ray led them through a back door and into a large room made dim and cavern-like by the stacks and drifts of boxes against the walls. Half of this came from the city. They had to dump it and get the vans restocked for the runners when the convoy got split up. Needs sorting out. I told Dr. D I'd do it, but...
But this is my busy work, since I'm so untrustworthy.
It rankled a little.
Gee. Ray sounded upset. It's not...
It sort of is. Mikey interrupted. He and Ray shared a look for a moment. Gerard watched and tried not to be too jealous. There were so many things he wanted to say. He'd missed so much over the past year. Maybe too much. He was a stranger in his own skin here, without even the comfort of his old name. Though maybe that was a comfort. He tilted his head, looked at Ray curiously. Jetstar? Ray smiled a little sheepishly, and unbuttoned his jacket to show a bleach-spotted blue t-shirt with the old video game character on it. A bandage peeked over the collar. Gerard hadn't noticed before. Neither, apparently, had Mikey.
"You're hurt," he said accusingly.
"Looks worse than it is," Ray said. "I promise. There was a nurse here earlier with the group that left."
He popped the top of a box, started sifting through the contents and sorting them into piles on the floor.
"What's with that?"
Gerard said idly, reaching for a box of his own.
"Fucking might as well."
"What's with what?" Ray repeated. "People leaving so soon?"
Gerard nodded.
"I'm not, like, an expert, Gerard. I just... The runners, a lot of them work together when they need to, but they're private. Everyone has their own reason for being out here or for coming out here, and you don't... No one talks about it. Do you want to talk about yours?"
No. No. Gerard did not want to talk about his or think about his. When he didn't answer, Ray looked away, pink and apologetic. Mikey asked,
"What are we going to do, Ray? Do you still want to?"
"I still want to find some place to set up a workshop," Ray said. "Dr. D said I could trade labor on his mobile transmission setup for any materials I find here."
Gerard perked up at the mention of the transmission setup. He'd been mechanically unpacking the contents of the boxes closest to him for a while, listening to Ray talk. And for the first time, he noticed that Ray's piles of clothes and foodstuffs were hiding another smaller pile of mysterious electronics components.
His transmission setup?
Gerard tried to sound casual.
"Maybe you should come with me, G," Ray said thoughtfully. "I haven't been able to find the problem with it yet, but you might know."
"Don't think he trusts me, Ray."
Gerard was able to keep himself from adding a, "like he trusts you," on the end of that statement, but he wasn't able to keep the bitter tone out of his voice.
"Give it time, party poison,"
Mikey told him softly. He emphasized the nickname just the slightest bit.
"That's gonna get some taking used to," Gerard said.
Ray laughed.
"Yeah, sorry, I keep forgetting, too. Fuck, this is... I've known you two for ages, but it's different out here."
He turned to Mikey. "You need a new name, too, Mikes."
"I've got one,"
Mikey replied smugly, lifting something cherry red out of the box he was working on. It was an old Cobra logo motorcycle jacket, slick red leather.
"Shit,"
Ray breathed. It was a nice jacket. Fuck only knew why it was in a stained storage carton in the back room of a warehouse. Mikey shrugged it on, and it fit really well, just a little too short in the sleeves.
"Cobra Kid," Mikey said. "Sounds like a fucking outlaw, doesn't it?"
"Yeah, it does," Gerard told him approvingly.
"I'm gonna go see what Dr. D wants in trade for this,"
Mikey said, tucking the jacket under his arm.
"Put it in with these parts," Ray told him, nudging the box with his foot. "You should definitely have that."
They kept working, mostly in silence, until Ray said,
"I think I'd better stop for now. Mikey?"
Mikey wandered over and poked through the box, taking things out and nodding every once in a while.
Yeah, he said. This is. We've got a car now, so...
They both looked up questioningly at Gerard, who rolled his eyes.
We have a car. We need to find... That is, I don't know how long we're supposed to stay here.
I think most of the runners have their own bolt holes. Mikey and I, we sort of thought we'd start a workshop, but...
Ray stopped. You should, Gerard said. Maybe I'll talk to Show Pony about it. He doesn't hate me, at least.
No one hates you, Mikey told him. No one knows you, even if they think they do. You can be anybody now.
Gerard was still thinking about that after Ray and Mikey lugged the boxes of components out to the front room. He was still sorting through increasingly thrashed and ancient-looking boxes of stuff, stubbornly determined to finish the entire stack, as if it would prove something to Dr. D. He had no idea what time it is, only that the sun had shifted in the sky, changing the pattern of shadows on the floor, and he was faintly, insistently, hungry. He found the half-smashed little boxes in with a jumble of bottles of bath salts and other toiletries that Gerard imagined didn't get a whole lot of use in the desert. One was plain bleach, and Gerard idly set it aside and reminded himself to ask Mikey if he wanted it. Once upon a time, before BLI, Mikey'd worn bleached blonde hair. The second, when he inspected it, was fucking neon red, if the illustration on the box was to be believed. Gerard's fingers tightened on the box. It was startling, a crimson fuck you in the midst of stained cardboard stolen goods, bland black and white BLI packaging. If he closed his eyes and let his mind wander, he could remember the feel of Corse's fingers stroking through his hair. Gerard shuddered once. He had to get it out of his head, he had to. Show Pony stopped him in the hallway, looking curiously from the box of hair dye to Gerard's face. Gerard wondered if his expression was as blank as his mind. His head was pounding with the thoughts he was holding back.
"There's a bathroom with a shower,"
Show Pony said gently. "Back behind the old kitchen, and since it rained yesterday, the cisterns are full. You won't have a better opportunity for a while." Gerard just nodded wordlessly, and thanks. He was practically on autopilot now, searching out the tiny, grimy bathroom, hands following the instructions on the box while he measured the steps of the process. Bleach, rinse, dye, on his pocket watch, incongruous now in the pocket of his dead Pegasus jacket. Gerard's hands didn't shake once, not until the dye was swirling down the drain around his bare feet. Then, water slipping lukewarm down the back of his neck, he closed his hand around his cock, leaned his forehead against the cracked tile, and let himself feel the phantom fingers in his hair again. "This is the last time," he told himself. It felt like a lie, like the hollowest promise he'd ever made to stop drinking. But when he stepped out of the shower stall and dried off with a shabby towel, a red-haired stranger watched him in the mirror, jaw tight and eyes wary. Party Poison didn't give a shit about the past. Party Poison would hold him to his word. Dr. Death-Defying whistled when Gerard passed the alcove where he'd set up his transmissions module.
"You're gonna have to run with looks like that," Dr. D told him. "You ain't gonna be able to hide."
"I never thought I could," Gerard replied.
"Brightest crayon in the box," Dr. D muttered, shaking his head.
He lifted an eyebrow over the frames of his aviators when Gerard just stared at him. "Move over," Gerard said, reaching for Dr. D's console. The DJ kept his hands where they were.
"Why?"
Jetstar, he said he would try to fix this for you, right? Well, did he tell you I can do it better?"
"He did."
Gerard put his hands on his hips and waited. Dr. D tapped his fingers against the edge of the desktop a few times.
"All right, sunshine, let's see what you can do."
He pushed himself away from the desk and let Gerard pull a chair in front of the console. Gerard stifled a sigh as his hands curled over the controls. The phantom itch between his shoulder blades suddenly disappeared. He cut his eyes to Dr. D, who had removed his shades and was twirling them in his fingers and watching him, eyes quiet but attentive. Gerard ran his fingers over the setup for a minute, less familiar with the broadcast components. "What's the problem?" he asked quietly.
"Feedback on some of the channels," Dr. D told him. "It's not a wiring problem. I already replaced any damaged connections."
Gerard nodded, already reaching for the headphones propped against a coffee mug emblazoned "Hope You Die." Once they were on, the noise disappeared. He disappeared into the frequencies, tweaking, readjusting the levels. He wasn't sure how long it took, just that Dr. D watched him the whole time. You're still going to have issues on the lower frequencies, Gerard told him, tugging the headphones down to rest around his neck. I think I solved most of the problems, though. Your levels were miscalibrated. I fixed that, and, well... He paused. The next thing... He'd either win Dr. D over or confirm all the reasons he wasn't to be trusted. I unlocked some encrypted channels for you. He keyed one up, slid the faders up, and handed Dr. D the headphones. Dr. D took them and slipped them on without comment. He listened for a few minutes, also without comment. Gerard started to get nervous after a while and nudged one of the faders so he could hear what was coming through the headphones. It was one of the Draculoid unit-to-unit transmission stations. He reached over and tuned the console to another station, the frequency the BLI supply trucks typically used. It was Dr. D's turn to stare.
How?
I'm sure you can put it together, Gerard told him. If they had half a brain, they'd have changed the encryptions once they realized I was gone. They will soon enough, I'm sure. He'll think of it before anyone else does. Gerard didn't clarify who he was. He knew Dr. D had more than half a brain. He was actually shocked that Course hadn't already ordered an overhaul of the whole broadcast system. It made him wonder, with an insistent sinking pain in his gut, exactly what Course was doing.
And when they do?
Dr. D asked. Come find me. I'll break them. Dr. D was still studying him like he was a fucking unicorn when the front door slammed and a blur of color blew through. Gerard turned to watch as the small cyclone of green, black, and yellow coalesced into a short guy in an army vest with a star-spangled bandana tugged over his face.
Fucking hell, Doc! Warn me the next time you lend me a van with busted heat!
The voice was eerily familiar, and Gerard froze. It couldn't be... But of course it was. The guy from the party was revealed when he tugged the bandana off his neck and slipped mirrored aviators into his collar.
It's the desert, punk. No one told you to stay out in it overnight.
Dr. D crossed his arms over his chest.
Sure, like you want me painting the patrols a fucking picture with my headlights?
The new surveillance drones are all equipped with infrared anyway, Gerard murmured, and the guy spun to face him.
The fuck you say? Who are you?
They looked each other full in the face for the first time, and Gerard, for his part, was frozen, staring way too long, but this guy... Gerard still remembered what that pink fucking mouth tasted like, and there wasn't even a spark of recognition in his eyes. Fuck. Gerard didn't know if he was relieved or pissed. Dr. D cleared his throat.
Fun ghoul meat party poison. He's new. Don't be a jackass.
Gerard had a moment to feel the abrupt bloom of pleasure at Dr. D's sudden support, before Fun Ghoul was laughing, an entirely incongruous giggle of pure amusement.
Doc, you know what they say about zebras and stripes.
Zebras, stripes, black and white. It made something click for Gerard. Fun Ghoul, Gerard realized, from the broadcast with the Stooges. Dr. D made a surprised little noise, maybe that Gerard remembered the song, but Frank was already groaning.
Yeah, thanks for that, Doc. Had every wavehead I ran across for days asking me that same dumb joke.
What is black and white and red all over? Gerard couldn't help it. Dr. D chuckled, and Fungal flipped him off before looking Gerard up and down, from the tangle of red hair to the dusty black toes of his boots.
Maybe it's you, he said with a half-hearted leer. Party poison.
When Gerard didn't react, Fungal rolled his eyes and let out a put-upon sigh.
A dead drac, he answered.
Oh, well, of course. Gerard suddenly sobered. That tone was the tone of the guy on the balcony, the one with darkness in his eyes.
Is that what you're doing with yourself these days? Dr. D asked. I've been getting reports this morning from Zone 1 on important things exploding. I can neither confirm nor deny, Fun Ghoul intoned, raising one oddly perfect eyebrow. Spent some time in the hills, watching with the buzzards. Saw your little convoy come through in pieces, speaking of driving after dark.
He sounded like he wasn't trying to sound concerned.
Everybody made it, Dr. D told him, even your special delivery. We lost the van in the city, but thanks to this one, they got out. The last car, that was you?
Fungul looked Gerard up and down again, skeptical. Gerard opened his mouth to reply, but Dr. D beat him to it.
Him, Pony, the kid, and the twins.
Dr. D and Fungul had a silent conversation for a moment, and Dr. D continued.
I was going to ask you to take Jetstar and the kid out, find them a nice little workshop somewhere. Party Poison's going with them. He can drive you.
Fungul looked less than thrilled.
Why can't they stay here? I don't even stay here all the time, Ghoul. You know that. Be your do-gooder little self and help out, you punk.
Another exchange of silent words. Finally, Fungal rolled his eyes.
And you call me a do-gooder? Fine.
Fungal looked Gerard up and down again, focusing on the holstered yellow gun.
I hope you can use that. If we're taking the fucking scenic tour, you're gonna need it.
Gerard was quiet for long enough to answer that question, and Fungal rolled his eyes again.
Doc, you're gonna fucking owe me.
Dr. D just tapped the earpiece of his shades against his teeth before slipping them back on.
We'll see. Seriously, dude, are you trying to find all the potholes?
Fungal bitched from the back seat. Gerard had refused to let him drive since a brief and terrifying incident the day before when Mikey had gotten them lost and Fungal, frustrated, had taken the wheel to get them back out on the road and had proceeded to catch air 3 or 4 times in a 2-mile stretch. He never flinched, hands steady as a rock on the wheel, and Mikey predictably had thought it was great. Fungal told them stories about the stunt shows one of the runner crews in 2 ran during the dry season. Gerard bit his tongue and tried not to say anything overtly big brotherly, and took the wheel back as soon as they'd stopped to wait out a drac patrol.
It's a fucking dirt road, Gerard mumbled. It's all pothole.
2 days they'd been out on the road, running from abandoned shack to warehouse to gas station, their path dictated only by drac cycle tracks, by the zone map that was Mikey's new most treasured possession. By Fungul, leaning loose-hipped against the hood of the Trans Am and verbally sparring with squatters in some half-comprehensible patois that still stuck to Gerard's tongue like molasses.
Cycles, Ray announced tersely from the back seat.
He was staring through the back window. Gerard had seen him swivel around in the rear view and glanced in the side mirror himself. Ray had the sharpest eyes out of any of them, except maybe Fungul, but as they had discovered when Fungul drilled them in marksmanship in a dry creek bed earlier that day, the worst aim. These cycles were far off, though. They didn't swerve from their course when Gerard turned the Trans Am onto an even bumpier dirt road and parked them behind an outcropping of rock. Gerard and Fungul both popped their heads out of the driver's side T-top at the same time, and Gerard twitched a little at having him so close. It had been almost a week, and still no sign or mention of their previous meeting. Gerard tried to tell himself that this was a good thing, that the neon-red hair was a good enough disguise to throw off anyone in search of Gerard Way from Scarecrow. A tiny part of him was disappointed. It was the same tiny part that stared whenever Fungul licked his lips.
"We're not going to be able to make it up zone before nightfall," Fungul said quietly. "Not with them holding that course. There's a Scarecrow outpost 3 clicks ahead of them. Hasn't been used for a while, but that must be where they're going. It's too close to where we were going."
Gerard squinted off into the distance, but all the hills and creek beds still looked the same to him, unless he had Mikey's map. Even that was only so much help. He rested his arms on the crossbar and his chin on his arms. "How long have you been out here?" he asked quietly. When Fungul just gave him a long, silent look, Gerard was afraid he'd asked a question he shouldn't have. They were still finding their feet in the avalanche of names, places, customs, slang that they'd slid into. But when Fungul licked his lips and answered,
"Since I got discharged and refused to wear a white suit?"
"Discharged?" Gerard asked automatically. Dr. Death-Defying was clearly a veteran. Gerard himself had only missed the draft because he'd had custody of Mikey. Fungul looked. "Aren't you a little young for—" At Fungul's long, narrow-eyed glance, he cut himself off. Definitely a question he shouldn't have asked. In the car below them, Ray and Mikey stopped rustling the map around, and Ray called up,
Guys, did you take a look to the north? So what's the plan for that?"
Gerard and Fungul both whipped around. Behind them, a bank of thunderheads was gathering fast. Fungul swore.
"Shit," Gerard echoed. "We need to get under cover, don't we? Where—"
He slid back into the driver's seat. Fungul hesitated for a moment before he dropped down into the back seat. He leaned forward to talk into Gerard's ear.
"There's one old safe house near here. I'll tell you where to go. Get us back on that access road we passed right before this turnoff."
His hands were wrapped tightly around Gerard's seat back. Gerard could feel the nudge of his fingertips against his shoulders and shivered unthinkingly. A few turns and a harrowing drive along the edge of a rockfall brought them around a blind corner where a valley opened suddenly in front of them, a long, low building sprouting from the other edge.
"There," Fungul murmured against Gerard's ear. "Drive around back."
"Whose place is this?" Gerard asked, mentally bracing himself for more questions about his car, their crew.
"Mine," Fungul said, "as much as it's anyone's."
His voice was clipped. The tone was one that Gerard had begun to identify as his close-to-the-vest tone.
Fungul? Mikey spoke up from the passenger seat. I hate to tell you, but it looks like you lost a couple of letters up there.
He was squinting at the roof, which spelled out DIE in crooked letters. Fungul snorted.
Who said it was an accident, kid?
Gerard pulled the car around the back of the building and parked near some dilapidated gas pumps, and Fungul circled the perimeter of the building before returning to where Ray, Mikey, and Gerard huddled under an overhang and letting them in the back door.
I checked my tripwires, it's safe, he said, shooing them inside and bolting the door behind them.
They were in a small diner kitchen, dim and gloomy, and getting more so by the minute as the thunderheads rolled in. Several appliances showed signs of use. Fungul saw Gerard swipe a finger along the porcelain surface of a stove and laughed.
Don't get excited, it's just the same old BLI slop in the cabinets. Go on into the front room, get comfy. Storm looks like it's going to be a bitch.
He started rummaging in a cabinet, and Ray stayed behind to help him. Gerard trailed Mikey out into the front room, where a few worn diner booths lined a windowed room. The attached service station was through another door, a small hallway leading to several more back rooms of some sort. Gerard and Mikey exchanged a look. This was a nice place, bigger than one person would conceivably need, cleaner than Fungul's description of it as a safe house had suggested. It was actually pretty much exactly the kind of place Gerard thought Ray and Mikey would want. Every squat and bolt hole they'd stopped at in the past week had boasted at least a few occupants. That this one was deserted except for Fungul, and he clearly didn't stay here all the time, struck Gerard as odd. The storm blew in just as Ray and Fungul carried BLI rations in from the kitchen and set them on one of the diner tables. The rain on the flat roof made it sound like they were actually underwater and killed all chance of conversation until it slowed from a deluge to a steady patter. When Gerard finished his food, he pushed the can away and crossed his arms over his chest, watching Fungul until he looked up.
"Spit it out, party," Fungul said, rolling his eyes.
"Why isn't this place a safe house anymore? It's decent-sized, it seems secure, I'm surprised no one's using it."
"I never said no one was using it,"
Fungul said, still in that same clipped tone. He pushed himself out of the booth and grabbed their empty cans, disappearing into the kitchen. Gerard looked between Mikey and Ray. Ray shrugged and kicked back, stretching his long legs along the bench seat and closing his eyes. He was still favoring his shoulder, even though he wouldn't admit it. Gerard made a face. Once in a while he recalled the serious Fungul, the one who seemed very far away, who'd called him brave for detoxing. Even the one who'd spent hours adjusting their gun stances and drilling them, albeit mockingly, on their marksmanship. But most of the time he just seemed to confirm he was exactly what Dr. D had called him, a jackass. Mikey shrugged too, but Gerard could read his motion with the ease of big brotherhood. "Worth a try," he was saying. Mikey slid out of the booth and followed Fungul, and after a moment, Gerard followed Mikey, just in case. Fungul had disappeared down the tiny back hallway, and Mikey caught up with him as he was pulling a stack of much-mended blankets off a shelf. The room looked like it had been an office once, but there were several thin mattresses stacked in the corner. Mikey knocked softly on the open door, and Fungul took his time turning around.
"Look,"
Mikey said evenly, leaning against the wall in that weird but nonchalant way he had.
"Doc asked you to help us find a place. This place looks pretty much exactly like what we need. You gonna blame us for asking? Isn't that exactly what we've been doing everywhere else all week?"
Fungul looked between Mikey and where Gerard was hovering in the doorway.
"Yes and no," he said. "Doc could have found a place for you through the grapevine eventually. Everything worth knowing goes through him."
"I was wondering," Mikey said slowly. "So why..."
"Why the grand tour? Maybe just to make sure you wouldn't get jumped by the first drac patrol you ran across. Let the runners get used to your faces, to that fucking ostentatious car."
"Ostentatious?" Gerard repeated, eyebrows raised.
"Fuck you," Fungul said, with a little bit of heat behind it. "I know all sorts of big words. They're all sizing you up, okay? They will be for a while. And for some reason to which Doc did not make me privy, he wanted me to give you my personal attention."
Gerard got the feeling that Fungul had several guesses why Dr. D had asked him, and wasn't happy about any of them.